Diversity.
Here to cause confusion. I will crash his board.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Office Hours. For the first time, I am joined here by Mark. How are you doing, Mark? You thought you'd pop in on Office Hours today.
I did indeed. I've been following this the topic of this particular Office Hours with some detail today, and I know a few people who've gone down to the protest, as do you. So I thought it's interesting with the whole rhetoric around this from both sides. So. That'd be interesting.
Yes, and out of respect for the farmers, I'm not going to play my pig slop clip this week. But just before we get going, I will mention I do have my awesome sale on. Just as winter is hitting us, it's absolutely freezing today. This morning, you know when it turns, and it's like, oh, right, winter's here now. This morning was so cold. I was doing the school run. It was like two degrees or something. Bitter rain.
Yeah, even down here on the south coast, it's pretty miserable. And I know that it's just something a foreign student once said to me when I was at university, and they said, "You don't really have seasons here. You know, there's not an extreme enough. There's not an extreme enough difference in the weather." For the seasons to be delineated. And I was just like, you know, you've only just come over here, right? You don't understand that a British person, someone who's been here, can just feel the winds have changed. The winds have changed. We know, you know, we're at the centre of all these different weather systems, and we know when it flips over and now it's wintertime, you know?
Yeah, for me, when the... when you're the top, you know, the top of your ears is so cold, you know, you feel like it's bitterly biting on the ear. And that's what it was this morning. It was dark as well this morning. Anyway, just before we get going, I will mention 25% off all courses. And I brought back, Mark, my favorite promo code of all. You know what it is.
Merit, pure merit, such merit, merit. Such merit, merit, 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 such merit.
Oh, good grief. You know,
Chinese waterboard torture technique.
I was about to say, I was like, you know, in terms of your advertising technique, which I admire, by the way, if you've ever had a filling at the dentist, they start the filling off by taking like that, the really fine drill, right? And just kind of chipping away at any decay and stuff like that. But occasionally they're like, oh, it's deeper. And then they get the thick drill, the one that vibrates your entire head and feels like it's drilling right into your brain. And that's what your advertising feels like going into my head through my ears.
Yeah, I want it to, like, it goes through to the part where you may actually dream about it. That's what I want. I want it to bury that deep, you know, merit. Anyway, I was inspired by the film Marathon Man, you know, with Laurence Olivier as the evil dentist. But anyway, let us get on to the main topic of today before we hit the Q&A here. And that is an event that we've been waiting for a couple of weeks now. The farmers' protest. About 20,000 farmers went down to Westminster, led by Jeremy Clarkson. And this is... really a very interesting story in many ways. One aspect of it that is particularly interesting to me, Mark, is the pure Marxist class warfare element of it. You know, I mean, I talked about this last week, but Lenin famously said that the kulaks needed to be liquidated as a class in 1917 or in 1918, I think it was. He signed what was known as the hanging order, where he basically said that he gave the order out that the kulaks, you know, if you find one, hang them up so everybody can see, because they are a parasitic class and all this sort of stuff. Now, when he was talking about the kulaks, basically he was talking about small landowning farmers, right? So, yeah, I mean, is it any wonder that the Soviet Union had famines? But yeah. I mean, they did. They massively attacked the kulaks and tried to liquidate them as a class, was the phrase they used to use.
The even more bizarre distribution that I can, because we're a bit different to, say, China or the Soviet Union in that we already import like 50% of our food, right? So they know what their alternative is that they want to just cede control, basically, not just to bigger farming conglomerates who will buy up the farmland, which will have to be sold to pay this enormous fine, essentially, for being a farmer, but also, like, it's there. You think about how many dirty handshake deals the government can make to enrich themselves. You know, there's the civil servants who will be ideologically captured communist minions, and then there's going to be superbly wealthy MPs massively profiting off the sale because they'll have facilitated it in some way. You know, it's even worse, basically, in my mind.
I will just say that the official statistic is 40% of food is imported, according to the latest stats. It's kind of gone up and down in different times, but in the current UK Food Security Index 2024 says roughly 40% of food is imported. And Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer have taken a look at that stat, Mark, and they've been like, what? Only 40%? We need to, those are toddler figures. We need to get we need to ramp those up and get them up to Venezuela standards.
Clearly. Go on,
Mark, go on.
There's a really insidious thing, right? Because obviously mainstream media, in particular BBC Verify, oh God, how I love to read BBC Verify, are running cover for the government on this, right? So yeah, the BBC News homepage at the moment has their live feed, which says thousands join tax protest, but that's qualified because it says Starmer says vast majority of farms unaffected as thousands join tax protest. And then right next to that is an article by BBC Verify, which says how many farms will actually be affected by the budget tax rises. And basically, they're running cover almost entirely off of the value of land. So a lot of what they talk about is, oh, you know, like if the farmer's married, then the tax-free allowance is doubled. And if you add in the bonus allowance for the home, then actually it's only farms over a value of £3 million. Over a value of £3 million. Which actually affects only a tiny number. And this 70,000 figure that people keep talking about is massively overblown. There's only like 100 farms, basically, in the country that will be affected by this. And this is just utter bullshit, because the farm is just not the value of the land itself. It's all the equipment on the land. And if you're if you farm livestock, it's the value of your herd as well. So you've got, like, I think Jeremy Clarkson was quoted as saying, you know, he's got a friend and the value of his herd alone is £1.2 million, but he makes 30K a year, you know, like after everything is said, he's got a big 300-acre farm, the whole thing's worth a chunk of change. But it's the equipment and the actual livestock, which are also a huge part of what the asset worth is. And so I think it's going to affect way more farms than governments say. Anyway.
I mean, in economics jargon, we'd say that the farmer's fixed and variable capital is quite significant. on top of the land, right? What you're talking about is their capital stock, essentially. The cattle would be variable capital. And then, like, let's say they own a combine harvester. That's probably worth, you know, so much. You add all of that up, and they easily make this threshold, even if they're not that well off. Now, I happen to notice this figure. Now, one of the things I'll say, Mark, is that you're absolutely right to pick up on the media and the journalists. I mean, we started talking about how Lenin wanted to eliminate the kulaks, liquidate the kulaks as a class. Unfortunately, YouTube terms and services do not permit me to say what I would do to journalists as a class if I was ever in Lenin's shoes. But they are such scum, honestly. This Narinda Kaur, I believe, has even been on Lotus Eaters before now. And want to highlight this one post I saw from her, because she said, farmers refusing to pay tax that everyone else is required to pay, bar the king. He's another person I want to talk about, by the way, Mark, but we'll get to that. But let's not go there today. They are greedy, wealthy brats. How dare they think protesting tax paying will garner them any sympathy? Corner shops pass down shops to kids. Let's not tax them because they aren't cash rich. Shut the fuck up, seriously, says Narinda Kaur. Now, there are a number of problems here, and I want to just, I think it's worth teasing out what the problems are with, reasoning like this. For a start, you have to draw a distinction between a grocery store or a retail shop, right, which is what the analogy she was drawing, and what you might call food security, what you might call your supply of agricultural goods in a nation. Classically, economists would think about the balance of the economy, right? And agriculture is thought of in different terms from the way that you'd think about industry, from the way that you'd think about the service sector, and retail goods and things like that. You know, there are different parts of the economy, and the different parts of the economy are not created equal. Okay, the farmers, the problem is that this woman is trying to apply an equality lens on this, as if to say, well, if it applies to shopkeepers, it should apply to farmers as well. Who do they think they are? They're spoiled brats type thing. But this is not actually recognizing the crucial thing that farmers do for the nation. And where I struggle with this, Mark, is that I'm old enough to remember the pandemic, and I'm sure you are. And do you remember what the government did during the pandemic? Oh, these certain jobs are considered absolutely crucial, so they get special dispensations. What was the exact phrase they used? Critical
they
services
called them
or
essential workers, they called them.
Essential workers. And this same absolute scum class of urbanite kind of city dwelling vermin that we call the media in this country didn't have any problem with the designation of essential workers then. They venerated them. They lionized them. They hero worshipped them in that point. But now they can't get it through their stupid skulls that actually farms are pretty important, and that this is not the same as a fucking corner store owner. I don't understand.
I think that it also goes back to a kind of strange inference where, because they live urbanly, on an urban land, of course, there's tons and tons and tons of foreign food options. So they kind of think about food less as something that we produce and something that's just kind of provided by the diaspora of global agricultural produce. So it ends up being that British farmers are not as important because British food is boring and we can always get our curry from India or whatever. or, you know, from abroad, unless it's from America, in which case, of course, we couldn't do that because that was a huge scare around Brexit, if you remember, chlorinated chicken and other produce.
Also, Mark, they're so stupid. I've bought sushi, so therefore it's from Japan. The salmon's probably from Scotland. You know, the chicken in your curry is probably from down the road, but they never think on that level. Anyway, go on.
No, they don't. And it's also, but the general attitude of government to security of national resources, which farming, frankly, is obviously, has been something which our establishment has held in disdain for, what is it now, like 60 years plus? Like, really, you think about the steel workers is a nice allegory and stuff like that. They don't care about, maintaining British stock of steel. Now we have to buy cheap shit from abroad. We also have to pay more for it. Our own home quality has all gone down. You know, you have no... It's a bit like Elon... Again, I'm going to draw yet another metaphor. It's like Elon Musk buying Twitter. Elon Musk bought Twitter not because it was a revenue-producing asset, although maybe he's turning it into that, but because control of what he would call the town square is way more important. You know, it's a resource which owning the means of and being able to maintain the quality of under your own control is way more important than its net fiscal cost to you. And farming is a bit like that. We control all of our food and farming and safety standards. We control all of the we have the option to be protectionist or not. But destroying farmland and then handing it off to the Alibaba group or whatever it is abroad, so you get a cash handout, and then you'd be surprised when suddenly, you know, the garlic has gone down in quality or whatever, and everything's rotting too soon, or it's not the right size or shape or whatever. You know, there's all these different standards where it's way more important to be the people in control of that than not. And they're just ceding that and just saying, no, we'll throw it all away because we hate this particular class. They're too white, they're too affluent, too whatever, like, or spinning their yarn.
But they also see the economy in pure terms of GDP or just the bottom line, you know, dollars and cents. Yeah. And the actual underlying resources or the underlying functions that are generating that money, or even more fundamental, what the land is for, is not part of the consideration. It's just like, you know, is it a good deal today type thing? And there was a pretty good example of this in the media. Now, I'm sorry, everybody, to subject people to this, but I'm going to be playing a clip from James O'Brien. Before we get to that, have you ever seen a full body picture of James O'Brien? I have to show you this.
Oh, please.
Here was James O'Brien standing next to Carol Vorderman. What do you notice about James O'Brien?
What is this body shape?
Well, I mean, okay, right, he's got a bit of a tummy, and, you know, we knew that, and he's dresses like a sloven. We knew that from when he interviewed Blair. What the fuck are these legs? Who has legs like that? He's got skinnier legs than Carol Vorderman. He's got like two twiglets for legs. Horrible, horrible physiognomy on him.
He's like peg leg pirate, but both legs are pegs. It's just, that's grim.
Oh, just a disgusting figure. I really hate James O'Brien. And his face, when you actually look at his face, he looks more... I've dubbed him the dog face gremlin, which is actually how Rick Steiner, the wrestler, described himself back in the day. But dog face gremlin is a good descriptor for him, I think. So.
I think it's fairly accurate. It amuses me that nothing's ever original. It's like always a callback to...
Always. Look, Gen X Daria, Mark. Everything's a reference within a reference, a nod and a wink, you know? Anyway, let me play this clip of James O'Brien talking to a farmer. And, we'll let it play. If you want to say anything, I'll just pause it, okay?
over me, well, and let someone who actually knows speak for once. And I know that, I know that's difficult for you, James.
Why are you so rude, Charlie? It's not
because
my fault.
Rude.
It's not
because
my fault. You've just
made. You are the rudest person on the radio because you sit there with your
I'm the second rudest person on the radio at the moment. At this moment, Charlie.
I tell you,
when a farmer inherits his farm and he can't afford to pay that inheritance tax because it's hundreds of thousands of pounds and he only makes £30,000 a year.
Well, look, can we crunch the numbers quickly?
That's his home, James.
Can we crunch the numbers?
I mean, first of all, Mark, I have to say this, right? Imagine how condescending you've got to be sat there in your LBC office, right, telling a guy whose literal livelihood it is, oh, can we crunch the numbers on your life, please? I know it better than you because I read it in The Guardian. I mean, what a twat. Can you imagine?
You just know that everyone in that office and everyone in that building hates him, but he generates enough rage clicks to justify his position, and that's it.
Oh, and also, can you imagine, like, him thinking that he is vital to the economy and the disguised? I just hate him so much. But anyway, let's carry on.
Quickly.
Key worker, yeah, O'Brien.
So hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of tax, presuming, of course, that it's passed from spouse to spouse and then to heir. So it's in excess of £3 million. So for hundreds of...
So this is, Mark, what you mentioned at the start. James O'Brien literally just repeating the BBC article, essentially, is what we're seeing here, yeah?
Yeah.
Thousands of pounds at a 20% tariff, regardless of what the figure is, the percentage is 20%. You'd have to be living in an estate worth sort of £6, 7, or 8 million.
No, £4.5 million, James.
No, hundreds of thousands of pounds, you said.
£4.5 million, exactly.
So that's £1.5 million, 20% of £1.5 million over 10 years.
Yeah, and how are you going to pay that?
40% for everybody else.
How are you going to pay that when you earn 25 grand a year?
The same. Well, I don't. How can you possibly be argued, Charlie? Charlie,
my house is protected. When a farmer inherits his farm, his house is at risk.
Why don't you sell some stuff?
What a fucking cock! Right, let's see where this goes.
Like what, James?
Well, some of your land.
There we go. There? Right. Why don't you sell your land then? Get off the land, Kulak. Yeah, no, go on, Mark.
Is also his element of like, why don't you sell some stuff? It's like, right, everything that I need that I have that's necessary for working the land, all of the stuff that goes on the land, or some of the land itself, and then or if it's just like. It's like someone just going, well, just make more money. Just sell more. Like, just make more money. As if, like, every single agricultural produce in this country is not does not have its price dictated to farmers instead of the other way around. Like, it's just insane.
Yeah, the margins are already very, very squeezed. Farming is a tough gig. It's a very hard profession, yeah.
Because Tesco or whatever it is goes over to a dairy farmer and says, we're going to buy X amount of milk and it's going to go at this price. You know, and the same with the grain merchants, the same. They tell you what price you're going to get. You don't get to say, oh, you know, that's too low for me. You're going to have to do a bit better. You don't get a choice.
Right, let's see what else this absolutely, I mean, excuse my language, ladies and gentlemen, but he's such a wanker, this guy.
I'm going to buy it.
I don't know. Lots of people are trying to buy land.
Yeah,
we spoke to.
Know. That's the funny thing.
What do you want to name?
Another farmer's not going to buy
John.
It, are they?
John's going to buy it.
Farmer.
John. No, John is no. John is going to buy it.
John's going to build solar panels on it.
John. I don't know what he's going to do with it, but he's going
to. Yeah, you don't know what he's going to do with it, you fucking cunt.
But you asked me who was going to buy it, which you don't recognise.
We've had the offers.
Shouting at me again.
Solar panels. We've had the offers for wind.
Well, there you go. Then what are you complaining about?
See, he just doesn't get it, Mark. He doesn't get it. He doesn't get that if you turn a fucking farm into a wind farm or a solar panel thing, you're not growing any food. You're not growing food anymore. Oh, he's such a twat. I hate this this class of person is an actual cancer on this nation at this point. This class of person that we're looking at right here. We cannot be ruled by these midwits for any longer. Fuck's sake.
Because we don't want to concrete over the land. I know you're a townie. I know you're happy living in your liberal elite world of London. But for us, the countryside is the countryside. It's where our food comes from, James.
So you've been offered.
You seem to have forgotten that. You seem to have forgotten that, haven't you, James?
Charlie,
you
don't.
Sat there.
Okay, mate. I'm going to have a
I'm not your mate. I hate you. I think you're an idiot.
Well said, that farmer. Fucking hell.
Okay.
Let's tarmac them. Yeah, get some solar farms on there. Yeah, why not, James?
I think
hey, James, you like immigrants. You probably want to see some homes there as well, don't you?
Well, down with homes.
When was the last time you went to a farm?
I grew up on a working farm. I probably should have mentioned that sooner. I grew up just outside Kidderminster in Worcestershire. Farmers are all around Chaddesley Corbett and that area.
So not only is he clueless, he's actually a traitor to his class as well. If he grew up on a farm, he's actually a traitor to his own people, which makes it even worse.
So your dad was a farmer?
Go on, Mark, sorry.
He's got no excuse to be this, what's the word I'm looking for, other than idiotic, this unaware, basically, about the state of things. And also just because you live down the road, I live down the road from a fruit farm. I don't know what their overheads are.
Do you think he just made that up in the minute? Do you think he was just like, so I grew up on a farm?
I hate him so much. Nonsense. He was like, homes are bad. It's like, how are you going to feed the people in the homes, James? How are you going to feed the people in the homes if there's no food?
So, no, I've explained several. Do you listen to this program?
I don't.
Well, how can you have such strong? How can you have such strong views about me then?
Because the few times I have listened to you, I heard how you speak to people. You talk over them and cut them off, like you've done to me.
Down with that sort of thing, Charlie.
You are down with that. I know.
I mean down with talking over people and shouting at them.
Oh, I'll shout at you. I'll give you everything that you try and give me.
I've tried to give you a fair hearing.
You haven't at all. Okay. I pointed the facts to you and you won't accept it.
Okay.
You know nothing, James. Stick in your London liberal lefty wokeism. You know nothing about farming.
See, I mean, in his mind, he won that exchange. In James O'Brien's mind, he came out the better of that exchange. And this is the issue, though. How can the donation live with somebody who is in a ruling position as the ruling class, having views like that, like James O'Brien there? This is an issue.
You have to make them see. And you like the thing that I look to at this point is probably the Canadian truckers protest, if you remember that, over there, where they literally blockaded a huge number of roads to make themselves heard. I don't know necessarily whether or not what the impact on policy was. I know that Trudeau at the time walked back a load of stuff, but I don't know if he's insidiously snuck it in other legislation. But that was the only time I've ever seen a protest effectively work, because you actually shut down the infrastructure of the nation. And similarly, the dock workers strike that's being threatened at the moment in America, that's also there. But you have to basically make them suffer. You basically have to say, like at the protest today, the farmers came in and donated a load of food to a food bank. But really what you'd have to do is starve the capital. You'd have to be like, right, we're not sending food to anywhere in London or whatever. And you'd have to have the supermarkets on board with that, which they're not going to be, because they want to, they don't really care. So you've got to figure out ways in which to make them listen to you. And that's basically it.
So the other clip I want to play, and I'm sorry to subject people to that, and it was rage-inducing as well to see it, but there's another bit of rage-inducing footage now, which is when the BBC caught up with Jeremy Clarkson at the protest day. And, I'm going to be pausing this because there are so many things that this encounter here basically sums up everything we've been saying so far. So let's stick this on.
Why are you here, Mr. Clarkson?
Well, because I'm here to support farmers.
Right. Are you angry?
It's difficult to be angry on somebody else's behalf. That's like being... Yes, no, I'm not angry on someone else's behalf.
Right. So it's not about you. It's not about your farm and the fact that you bought a farm to avoid inheritance tax.
Classic BBC there. Classic. Oh, yeah. It's not the fact that I bought a farm to avoid inheritance tax. The fact.
You told the Sunday Times in 2021 that's why you bought it.
These people.
Sorry?
BBC. Okay, let's start from the beginning.
Sure.
I wanted a shoot. OK? That's even worse to the BBC. I wanted a shoot, which comes with the benefit of not having to pay inheritance tax. Now I do. But people like me will simply put it in a trust. And so long as I live for 7 years, that's fine. And as my daughter said, you will live for 7 years. You might be in a deep freeze at the end of it, but you will live for 7 years. But it's incredibly time-consuming to have to do that. And why should all these people have to do that? Why should they?
So one of the reasons Rachel Reeves says she brought this in is to stop wealthy people using it as a...
See, what is striking here is that the BBC journalist took it as her role to basically represent the government in this situation. Not be like, oh, what are you guys here for? What are you protesting about? She came with a set of talking points from the government to represent the government.
Secondly,
I mean, I'm pretty sure that in the BBC handbook, I remember I used to be married to a journalist, Mark, and the BBC have got this manual of like how to tell the truth and how to be non-biased and so on. I'm pretty sure it doesn't say in there, oh, when you turn up to a protest or a strike, go in there with a set of government talking points to represent the fucking Labour government. Anyway, go on, Mark. So, yeah, sorry.
Secondly, is that she is not listening to him, right? She's already decided all of the questions she's going to ask and what she's going to say and what point of view she's going to represent. Because he's just come back to her, you know, with his back to the beginning talk about exactly how the wealthy evade tax anyway, right? So the inheritance tax is avoided through the time-intensive process of setting up trusts and other bodies that then basically inherit the wealth instead, which means that the super uber rich don't pay nearly as much as Joe Public. So she's not listened to that. She's just come back to him immediately and said, oh, well, this Rachel Reeves says this is to prevent the ultra wealthy buying a farm as tax avoidance thing. And it's like you've made it more awkward for them. But at the same time, you've just thrown all of the family farms under the bus who now have to either go through the laborious process and learn this additional thing in order to preserve their asset wealth, or you have to, you know, while the rich are likely to just pay an accountant to do that, and it's annoying and it's a bit of a pain, but like basically it won't generate any revenue for the government. They'll find the other evasion tactic and use that, right? That's what I'm hearing, is that it's completely useless policy that only screws over the, shall we say, non-legally savvy farmers regarding tax evasion. And then forces an entire class of people to then learn new ways of tax evasion, to prevent the loss of our farming infrastructure. Absolutely insane.
You know, I've seen, since it started, by the way, a number of people speculating on my views about protests. And some people asking why I'm not down there, and other people asking, since you're generally against protests, hey, how come you're for this one? I will answer that after we get to the end of this interview.
No, that was the only reason she did.
Well, the other reason was to raise money for public services. Well, have you seen...
Are you listening to this?
Have you tried to get a GP appointment lately?
Yes, right. I just recently had a heart attack.
Okay.
And now she's making it about the NHS. No, she's... it's just...
You know, this will fund the NHS, but also unlimited funds for Ukraine, right? We have a £22 billion black hole. We need to tax our farmers to death in order to fund it, but also as long as it takes our foreign allies £22 billion. I think they literally did pledge £20 billion to Ukraine, didn't they? So it's like, oh, and then when defending it, they were like, well, this is something that was ring-fenced. We can't possibly not fulfill that obligation to Ukraine.
What about the refugee budget? What about the foreign aid budget? What about all this other absolute wank they spend money on? Oh, but no, that they have to spend that because they are client groups of the government. Whereas the people who actually supply the food for the nation and feed the refugees that they're so keen on and feed all of these people that they want to keep on bringing into the nation, they're the ones who are going to have to stump up, essentially. I mean, this is like, it's not just kind of Marxist politics. It's also pure friend-enemy politics, but being played in a very dangerous way. by this Labour government, who are, I mean,
so
it's yeah, like so, they, so the for- Go on, Michael. Sorry.
The foreign aid budget's £8 billion, right? They're raising it to £8 billion this year.
£8 billion.
8.3 up from 6.9. So it's just like you cut that by 5% or whatever, and you've got the money that this supposed inheritance tax scandal will actually raise or would raise theoretically.
No. Honestly, I hate Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves and the whole. This government they're just at war. They are, the government is at war with the nation, right? They are, I mean, from Southpaw to the bloody attack on the pubs to the attack on the old people, this government is at war with the people. And this is why I wanted to rant about King Charles. If King Charles was a steward to this country, he would dismiss Keir Starmer. If there was ever a time for the king to step in, it has to be now. How can we go on with this particular government? They are just out of control at this moment. And yeah, I mean, yeah. I said on Twitter yesterday, Mark, I reckon that Keir Starmer, as things stand right now in the world, is the worst world leader in the world. The worst in the world.
And we've seen a lot. We've seen a lot of awful leaders. And this guy, yeah.
Well, I mean, even Justin Trudeau has just announced the largest cut to Canadian immigration in 100 years. And when I put that tweet up, a lot of people were saying, well, what about Kim Jong-un in North Korea? And I said, well, if you have a look, Kim Jong-un has an 80% approval rating in South Korea. In South Korea, Mark. They've got an 80% approval rating of Kim Jong-un. Do you know what Keir Starmer's approval rating was? And this was before. Keir Starmer's approval rating is something like minus 38, minus 40. And that was the last time YouGov done it, about a month ago, because they dare not ask the public what they think about this man. It's out of control. Something needs to happen against this government, because they are, in the eyes of the world, I mean, even Emmanuel Macron, or these horrible kind of creatures that we've seen in the past few years, they look like brilliant statesmen compared to Keir Starmer. He is absolutely trashing this country, ruining its reputation in the eyes of the entire world. And honestly, I mean, I don't think King Charles is ever going to actually do anything, but what's the point of him then? I mean, surely there has to be a safeguard against this. You know, what happens? I mean, it's a good hypothetical civic question. What happens if a total psychopath somehow finds himself in number 10? This is what we've got right now. A total psycho has somehow found himself on the reins of power, and there are no safeguards, there are no checks, there are no balances against what happens. I mean, this is really where the crown has to come in, right? Anyway, go on, Mark.
That's theoretically what they're supposed to do. But, I mean, you know, Elizabeth II, long may she rest, brought in a very, very non-aggression pact with the reigning government, right? They said that she would not get involved at all, and she just fulfilled her kind of royal duties or whatever and got out the way. There was never, and their sort of royal family's stance of neutrality, but you're like, it can only go so far, right? Like, how long before they have to do it? They have to step in, and they won't, because they've had 2-3 generations now of not actually having to do monarch things and just sort of being the public face of tourism in the UK.
Presumably, Prince Charles owns a shitload of farmland himself. You know,
knowing Charles, knowing Charles, Charles loves the idea of like dissolving the monarchy eventually. He loves the idea of stripping away, you know, the power of the monarchy and the influence of the monarchy. And so he probably is down with it. He's probably down to take the personal hit, frankly. He's like, doesn't care.
Well, let's get to the end of this interview. And I'll address the things about the protests. We'll also have a look to see how various political parties got involved with this as well. before we hit the super chats.
Yes.
So where should they get the money from if it's not from farmers?
From farmers. We hear that, everyone.
With
BBC
assets.
Thinks you should be paying for everything. Do you know how many people pay inheritance tax in this country?
It's 4% of estates.
What?
4% of estates.
4% pay inheritance tax. 96% of the population of the UK does not pay inheritance tax. After this becomes law, 96% of farmers will.
Where have you got that figure from?
Who here, can I just ask, who here is going to be unaffected by these changes? No one.
Right. Where have you got...
See, this is the thing. I don't understand where these journalists get off. Standing there and telling these farmers to their faces that they're not affected when they know that they are. Otherwise, they wouldn't bloody be there, would they? How stupid are these people?
And even the ones who aren't there are thinking about their children, and they're thinking about the massive rates of inflation that we've experienced as well. This policy is not just, dangerous now, which it is, but it's the fact that it then provides an inroad for the greedy little civil servants and politicians in Westminster to look at that and go, okay, how is this policy changing now over the next 4 years? Or are we going to just freeze the value, which is essentially a bump in revenues for us because that's important to them? So it's not just them. It's the children of the farmers who will suffer as well. If you're on the threshold, right, if your farm's worth, whatever, £2.8 million, right, and you're not personally affected right now, but you know that in 20 years or whatever, your children who are going to inherit this farm, that farm is probably going to be worth a considerable chunk more, especially with how quickly this government is fucking our national finances and inflation being there. So it's like, yeah, it doesn't affect necessarily people right now, a number of them, but they're concerned for the future. There was a really striking image that came out from the protest today of they got a load of farmers' kids on plastic tractors and made them go down the road in front of Westminster. I'll try and link you up, actually. It was just, yeah, here we are. Let me pop this in the private chat here. There you go. You can pop that up. And it is true. It's a generational thing. It's about the fact that, and I put up a tweet about it. I said, the Westminster establishment cannot conceive of generational farming being a good thing. According to liberal principles, these children should be free, in quotes, to choose a life of drudgery in an office doing marketing instead, right? Whereas the reality is that most of these kids grow up farming, they do farming their entire lives, they inherit the farm and then they continue to do it and they pass it on to their kids. And that's something which we consider on our side of things to actually be not just valuable in terms of the experience and quality, control, basically the farmers passing on their skills to the next generation, engenders a kind of duty in the farmers' children as well, that's what they're going to do because they've been farming for generations. And just in terms of their general happiness, is it any wonder why farmers, even though they feel the pinch, keep doing what they're doing because it's all they've ever known. It's all they want to do. It's like your Trumpton example or medieval blacksmith, right? Mm-hmm. Like these people are happy with the lot essentially that they've been given. And it's not because they're exceedingly wealthy. I'm going to have 4 or 5 different cars and a big tractor and a combine harvester. No, it's because this is what they were made to do. It's what they were born to do.
Yeah, well said, Mark. And as we talked about last week, it is an attack on an entire way of life, not just the farms themselves and the food security, but just they hate the idea of there being this enclave of the old Britain. You know, they want everything essentially to be fucking Milton Keynes or something, and I've noticed, I'm in rural areas quite a lot because I have the lodge. I have noticed, Mark, that they are sneakily building new towns in rural areas right now, and they spring up. And I tell you how I know. On my sat nav on my car, the map is from 2020, okay? And I don't update it, so the map is just stuck. It's frozen in 2020 time. So if they build new roads or if there's a new thing there, it doesn't show up on the map, and you find, and occasionally they've altered the road, so you end up getting lost and you find yourself, well, this has happened to me two or three times now, where I've ended up in a brand new residential estate in the middle of bloody nowhere. And what they do, they tuck them off. They kind of come off a main road in the middle of the country somewhere, and all of a sudden you're in this kind of quiet residential area. I found one in Wales when I was driving back to my parents one time. I found two or three in and around West Sussex, Surrey area. And I know that the locals actually protest against these things because there are signs up everywhere. I know they're trying to build a new town in Wisley called New Wisley, and the locals are dead against it. They're trying to stop no to this new town because essentially what they're trying to do is build quote unquote affordable housing in these pockets of the countryside. And of course, who's going to move to those? Non-locals, people from elsewhere, possibly even immigrants. Okay. Now, one of the things I'll say about these new housing estates that they're building all around the country is that they're not particularly cheap. I've had a look at the prices on them, and you're not really getting a bargain in these areas. So it's not particularly cheap housing. The other thing I'll say is that they're basically identikits. I've had a couple of friends who, I had one friend who bought one of these places up in York, and another one just outside Cambridge. And their houses, of these two friends of mine, are basically identical. Like, it's the same layout. It's the same. I think in America, they call them McMansions, right? Now, they're not mansions. They're kind of normal British size homes. But, you know, you get a bit of a garden there. The layout is really similar. And the architecture, it's kind of sneaky, right? Because if you just turned up there and you didn't know it was brand new, and, you know, you didn't have all the for sale signs and, you know, the bit of dust where they've been doing construction or whatever. If you didn't have all those signs there, you'd think this housing was built in the 1990s or something like that, because it doesn't look brand new. It looks kind of, they've made them in such a way. And these are cropping up everywhere, absolutely everywhere. And that is changing the country too. Anyway, go on, Mark, sorry.
Yeah, there are two things which come to mind here. The first is, because I've got a lot of new housing developments being built near me, the first is that the quality of these is poor. I have a friend who's a builder, and he says they're designed to last 50 years, right? That's the standard which they're using, whereas before it was 200 years. Mm-hmm. And so they've also got this sort of weird thing where all of these towns that are pre-existing were made in a way that was suited to the time and the place in which they were made. And they were made using local materials. They have a character of their own. These new developments, these new builds, because every street looks the same, it's all devoid and soulless and horrible, really. Aside from the fact that many of them, you know, my sister moved into one of these and they said, you know, they had huge and horrible damp issues, you know, from year one, basically. It was really, really grim.
They're really weird, though, because it's like they've built like a little town. So it's really quiet, right? There's no shops. And you're in the middle of bloody...
This is the other thing.
You're in the middle of bloody nowhere as well. So it's like, what the hell is this place? You know?
Yeah, so there's the additional stuff there, which is, first of all, the builders are told to build houses, but not infrastructure for amenities. And those, and if they are, right, local councils sometimes mandate that you have to put in, you know, a parade, basically, you know, a small group of shops for the locals to use, so they don't have to drive everywhere. And what the builders do instead is they build houses on the normal footprint. But instead of having like a normal front wall or where a window would be or whatever, they just flatten it so that they can put a big glass pane in and say that that's a shop. However, because there's no demand, there's no real demand for people to move there. You know, the reason they're built in places which are convenient, but not because any particular... you know, it's not any, you know, a bit like port towns or towns on particular main roads built up over time. But because they're building them just willy-nilly, it's all very artificial. There's no demand for, like, why would you move to wherever you called it, New Wisley or whatever it was called, other than, you know, because it was just a place to live. It's just another economic zone, another economic unit. It's not, there's no history there. There's no connection, really. The people who've lived in the towns nearby have lived there quite comfortably, and they have enough space for their own people, given our population decrease at the moment, really, of natives. So that's going on. There was the other story I wanted to bring up, which is more of an aside, is that in World War II, when we developed radar infrastructure, trust me, this is relevant. We didn't want the Germans to know that we had it. So what they did was they built these great big underground bunkers. I think they're about four stories. It was enormous. And then they built them underground and then put a little farmer's cottage on top of it with the radar tower to kind of hide where they were. And they built, I think, six of them, and three of them are in the UK. And one of them has been turned into a museum that you can visit. But they're all identical. They're all exactly the same. And they're all very, very clashing with the local architecture as well. And you can feel that locals complained about it at the time. But if you were like a German intelligence officer, you just immediately click that you've seen this building two or three places, you know, around the world. It's really obvious. I thought that was quite funny. But,
I mean, these identikit kind of new residential zones, there's also like nothing for miles around. So the closest place will be like a 15-minute drive to a Sainsbury's superstore. And if you're lucky, it will be on a roundabout with a McDonald's on it. And that's your lot. Yeah. It's like, well, like you're literally living nowhere, you know?
Oh, sorry. I forgot to mention about these new build shops. So the builders are told to build the shop. So they build the house. It's not really fit for purpose as a shop. So they build it with this big glass panel in it, but it's designed in such a way that inevitably after 2 years, I think it is, if they haven't had an occupancy, they get converted back to houses again, right? Because they've built as a house. So they convert them back. So there's an estate near me and it's whatever, 400 houses or something. And they had three shop fronts, if you want to call them that, that were available. No one wanted to live there because it's full of dust. The whole thing was built on a floodplain. Nobody wanted it there. It's all council housing. But there's a huge turnover of residents because basically of the, you can't have a spare bedroom, right, if you're in a council house. It's not, you get moved on. So they move families in there. The families grow up. Then the kids move away and they'll go to university or whatever, and then the family gets moved on to another council house on another estate somewhere. And I'm told by a contact that I won't reveal that a similar thing happens with problem families, that they just get bounced around basically between three or four council estates if they cause trouble to avoid conflict or something. And that's kind of what these nowhere towns feel like to me, is like holding centres for families and problem families, you know.
Yeah. Well, see, I mean, I don't know, the ones near me, like I said, they're not cheap if you want to get them. Like, I mean, it's okay, but they may be a little bit cheaper than the other houses around there. But I mean,
they're still like 250k plus.
I mean, well, if you buy a house in West Sussex or in rural Surrey or whatever, you're looking over a million right there. So they'll be selling for like 650k or 600k or something. That's still not cheap, right? You still can't. So I'm not actually sure who is like buying up these places. Or, I mean, like I mentioned, I know a couple of people I was doing PhDs with who ended up buying up these places. I think one of them then sold it and moved to a normal house after a while. But so people are buying them, I guess. But anyway, let's finish off the Clarkson bit, and then I will address some of the questions about the protests, and we'll hit the Q&A.
96% figure.
Well, you've got 96%. Well, the same place that Rachel Reeves does, from the middle of her head, from the Sixth Form Debating Society that she was no doubt a member of, which formed her opinions and yours.
I am not expressing opinions. I'm literally asking you questions. Do you know that, Mr.
She did. She was expressing opinions. Her questions were also loaded.
But don't you think? It was one of the key tenets of proper journalism that you never ask a leading question, and all of her questions were leading.
Yeah, and also government talking points, literally talking points from Rachel Reeves and the BBC, etc.
Mr. Clarkson. Right. So, what is your message to this government?
Please back down, please.
And get the money from where?
Well, they've got 40 billion. I'll tell you where you get there. Walk into any of the offices around here. If you don't understand what somebody's job is, fire them.
Based. That was so...
so based. You should run. I want him to run.
That was brilliant.
And that would be his only policy. That he will spend 4 years walking around every office in Westminster, and if he doesn't understand what someone's job is, he'll fire them. And that would be enough for me.
Civil service is too top. You know that.
How
I must get on.
Brilliant. I was... So, I made a video earlier on today, Mark, or I released a video earlier on, which was having a go at Nigel Farage and his pitiful answer on the... on a different topic, but he did actually turn out today. Here he is. He was dressed in his flat good optics. He's kind of dressed up in the rural way, and not bad. But I have had a few reports from people who went down there saying that the Tories were there as well, and they actually had a big stage, and apparently Kemi Badenoch gave a speech. So the Tories were down there too. Although I did hear other reports that the Tories were actually booed while they were there, because those new housing projects that we were just talking about, that was a Tory special. And I reckon that if people went into the history of that, it was probably a donor class thing. The construction... industry is big on backing the Tories, but anyway, go on, Mark. Sorry,
I've just linked you two clips. One is the first one's the big boo, which is great to see. It's only about 10 seconds, and the other one is Farage speaking at the protest to a Telegraph guy for 30 seconds, I think, or a
All
couple
right.
of minutes. Whatever.
So, well, what I'll do is I'll share my screen here. So this is Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, being booed. Can you hear that? It hasn't come out, has it? Hold on. Let me... Okay, can you hear this? Wow. You want to know what you call that in wrestling, Mark? That is called heel heat, sir. Heel heat. Genuine heel heat this Labour government has got. Proper heels. That is a heartfelt boo.
Yeah. One of the things that touched me about this protest as well was they did a remembrance thing, right? Where they said 2 minutes silence, and there are tens of thousands of people there. You can see them, and not one person was making a noise. It was dead quiet. It was really something, because it's not just the act itself. It's the fact that it's something which is, quintessentially British. These are British people with a respect for our traditions that the government and so many groups just don't have today. Like, it gave me a lot of respect, honestly.
And this is the other clip of Farage.
Let me just get a picture, mate. It's all right.
You've got to tell him. Nigel, you're not speaking on stage, but you're obviously supporting the farmers. What have you got to say to Rachel Reeves? Yeah, I mean, I've grown up in Hurwinds, and I've grown up surrounded by farms and by farming communities. And the trouble with what she's done, that someone in the Treasury's done their sums wrong.
Yeah.
Because what will survive the small holdings? What will survive the giant agri businesses? It's the ones in the middle. And yes, they've got inflated land prices because a lot of very wealthy people have been buying farmland. We get that. We know that. And they're the ones that are going to pay the price. And they're the ones actually that have shepherded the landscape we love so much for century after century. I have to say, though, I feel it's a broader attack on the countryside in general.
Yeah. Are Labour just bad at sums, or are they bad at politics?
Well, the Treasury are bad at sums. I mean, they've never got one right in my lifetime. But Labour aren't very good at politics. And, you know, they've won nearly 100 seats in rural or semi-rural England. And that's why I think that this is a political battle that can be won. I genuinely do. I think that at a minimum, the threshold needs to be revised. But I'm here with a group of farmers from my constituency up in Essex. And, you know, they've got 300 acres of land. In theory, it's worth 5 or 6 million. They're lucky to make 30 grand a year profit on it. It's as simple as that.
Do you think this is something which is political?
Tell you what, it's not a very good margin, is it? 30 grand. 30 grand profit's not that good.
It's be motivated more than actually by the need to raise tax.
Well, I think North London hates rural England. They think they're too white. Things like that.
Interesting bit of identity politics thrown in by Nige there, Mark. After his cuckold read the other day, now he leans into this. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I said something like, imagine if only Nigel had not shown us his lack of spine regarding Islam. I imagine his policy if the farms were handed to imams, he would pray to Mecca and throw his hands up.
Zero, of course, being pushed upon them. Just different people. There was a complete disconnect, I think, between town and city in the most extraordinary way.
Nigel, as thanks for talking today.
Yeah, and we've seen this disconnect between the town and the city on this stream, haven't we? Not only James O'Brien was in Narinder Kumar, or whatever her name was, and Narinder Kaur.
Kaur.
And also Victoria Derbyshire. All three of them basically showed a complete disconnect with why this is even important. They don't even understand what the issue is. They think it's just a pure issue of, tax and spend. And, you know, there is absolutely no consideration given to what they're actually dealing with. Anyway, last thing I want to say on this before we hit the Q&A here is that at the start of the stream, people were asking, well, why aren't I down there? Why don't I go there? Now, I said this to Carl and I said this to everyone else as well. I don't think this is this should just be left to the farmers. I honestly don't think that. It is shouldn't be a mass protest. And if you go down there, you should go down as media and nothing else, right? Because it's not your thing. And I can just see, you know, I can just imagine bad headlines. You know the headline they'd run, right? This group has hijacked the protest or whatever. And, it would, you know, they try to make it about you as opposed to the issue. So I was against that idea in general. I know some people have gone down there. But
the containment force, basically. Yeah.
The other thing I just want to mention is that I am well known. You know, I wrote The Populist Illusion, the book, Buy It Now, etc., for not being very up for protest in general. This is different, however, because the farmers are already an organized minority, if you want to put it that way. In pure elite theory terms, they are an identifiable group that have some power, right? They are, in fact, a rival castle to the government. That is why power is attacking them. Power hates a rival castle, seeks to eliminate it, right? And as we talked about, classic left-wing socialist attack on the kulaks. They hate them, okay? And they hate what they represent, too. The farmers have the potential to actually cause serious disruption and to actually cause a real headache because they have some power. This is as distinct from becoming the rabble, a disorganized mass that is just kind of, you know, going down to London for a chimp out or something like that. or something like Jan 6th, which I also thought was stupid, you know, where you don't have a plan. This is very different. They are a distinct group. They have distinct interests. They have some power, and they have distinct, finite, achievable goals that they're trying to get. This is different. And if you, you know, I shouldn't have to really explain that, but given some of the comments in the chat, I thought I'd just explain those two things are different. I will say, go on, Mark, go on. Sorry.
Yeah, I will say that they even if they go down and their plan is the protest and they see that it doesn't work, they're in a position because they talk to one another, because they have this focal point, really, weirdly enough, in Clarkson, and the tacit support of, you know, say what you will about Farage, but 4 million people did vote for his party. So they have the tacit support in their mind. It's less about whether or not that's effective and more whether or not they perceive the rest of the nation being behind them, which I think that they will. That means that more concrete plans, should this fall through and the government not listen, which we know it won't, to then take effect. You know, I know someone was saying there were plans that they might start blockading major roads and stuff like that. And I'm curious to see whether that will happen.
No, I do know there are other views available here. Our buddy Alex, the steam train dude who's been on my channel many times, Alex Masters, he believes that the government will just strike a deal with the farmers, and the all of this dissident energy that's built up around them will be instantly contained, where the government just basically say, okay, we won't do it then. They'll back down. Or they'll cut it, they'll say, okay, well, it won't be 20%, it'll be 10%, and the farmers will accept it and go home. Generally speaking, if you're dealing with a normal, competent government, I'd agree with Alex, right? I just don't know if it's in Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves. I mean, these people are psychos. I just, like, is it in them to be...
That they'll just define the farmers as enemies, and then he'll go into prosecution mode. That's how I feel it will go.
I mean, Starmer, he's already said, like, you know, he's shrugging it off as if nothing's happened. Like nothing phases this dude. He is, I mean, we've compared him to the Terminator before. I'm just not sure if anybody's there. Nobody's home. I mean, one of the most telling things for me is, what are some of your favorite stories, Kia? I don't have any. This is somebody with no inner life, right? This is somebody who we have seen repeatedly now doesn't like the idea of a portrait on the wall. He's taken about like 5 or 6 or 7 portraits down. It started with Thatcher, but he's taken like Disraeli down, and he's taken all sorts of people down, Gladstone off the wall, because he just doesn't like people looking at him. This is a psycho.
Yeah, do you think there's a subconscious effect where he can feel the weight of the judgment of the ancestors bearing down on him, and he just can't face it?
Well, if he was normal, maybe, but I'm not even sure. If we found out that Keir Starmer was actually an android, you know, custom built by a evil globalist scientist or something, I wouldn't be that surprised, because he doesn't follow the natural incentives of politics. It's like he's trying to be hated by the country, and I've never seen this. Like even if you compare them to who Trudeau or Biden or Macron, these are people who still have some like political nous, or they try to come across in a good way. I mean, I saw the Justin Trudeau announcing that they've got some things wrong in immigration, and you know, he speaks to everybody as if they're children, really. But at least he's trying to be liked. Like Starmer just doesn't do any of that stuff. He just doesn't even, he's not even trying to be liked anymore. It's just like, no, I am here to fuck you over, and nothing you say or do is going to make a difference. I am determined, and if you disagree, you'll face the full force of the law. The full force of the law. It's like we've got like the shittest version of Judge Dredd possible, Mark. The kind of Judge Dredd as played by Arnold, as played by Arnold Rimmer.
Judge Dredd as played by Arnold Rimmer. What a perfect description. What an apt description. I am law.
Anyway, let's hit these super chats then, and then we'll okay. So first of all, the Q&A from the week from a week ago when I did the last office hours. Somebody sent a super thanks saying, "I am reconsidering my prediction about Iran being tagged with Trump's demise. I underestimated the incompetence of the regime propagandists. I still think that they might try. The incentives are too high. And the excuses they'll give is, remember, Trump killed Soleimani. However, I am less convinced that it would work out the way they expect." Well, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, we haven't even discussed Joe Biden trying to start World War III on his way out, you know. I feel like I saw Morgoth made a tweet about this earlier on. He said, it's kind of weird in the American system how the outgoing president gets a month to fuck things up for the next guy coming in. And it's like, yeah, Joe Biden's still the president and he could start World War III before January. And he's literally trying to do that right now by giving Ukraine license to strike within Russia.
There was a thing this morning, wasn't it? Moscow said this morning that 6 US-made missiles were shot at Russia and that they shot them down. And they're threatening nuclear stuff at the moment.
Yeah, and every time, because our government did this, the dickhead Starmer started the trend on this. And every time this happens, Putin goes full civilization Gandhi. We are my words come backed with nuclear weapons. You remember the Gandhi, meme?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if it's a big bluff out or what, but it's a dangerous situation. I think their plan basically is to bog Trump down to get the situation so bad that Trump won't be able to pull out of Ukraine or the Ukraine situation. I've got a funny feeling, though, that will fail. And the reason I say that, Mark, is that without becoming too kind of blue and on conspiracy sphere, I think there is, right, without going full Russiagate on everybody, I think there is a weird connection between Moscow and the Trumpist, right? I mean, Tucker Carlson just rocks up in Moscow and has an interview with Vladimir Putin. Robert Barnes goes on the Duran. I mean, okay, I've been on the Duran. And I don't in any way work for the Russians, but like when Robert Barnes goes on the Duran and says, oh yeah, a lot of the Trump inner circle, they don't watch the news anymore. They watch the Duran. I'm like, okay, you know, I like those guys. I like the two Alexes, but come on, they are pro-Russian. They're pro-Russian. Yeah. I mean, there's no other way. I don't think that I would be doing too much of a disservice to the Duran to say, they've got a bent, and their bent is pro Putin, basically.
Yeah,
right?
I think
I do think there is something there, right? Go on, Mark.
I was going to say that what Trump and Putin, at the very least, seem to have a kind of respect for one another. At the time, during his first presidency, I think I said something along the lines of that Trump's inherent sort of unpredictability or whatever basically kept other world leaders in line, and that his willingness essentially to push the button on a number of issues to preserve American hegemony made him enough of a threat that you treated him the same way that you treated a sleeping lion or whatever, you know, carefully. And so I feel like it's a sort of Trump's presidency, even if they try and sabotage everything, like basically Trump will for Zelensky to go through peace talks. The European Union and Britain will also cuck along with that, because they're not going to say no, basically, to, because Trump holds all the money, really, and the financial backing, even if Britain decides that it suicidally wants to throw money at the Ukraine situation. And Putin will see Trump as more reasonable, bizarrely, than the current administration, and will say, okay, we'll cut it off here at the whatever mountains in the middle of Ukraine, and we'll take the right-hand side. And yes, Europe will suffer, but the conflict will end. That's how I feel it goes down.
Somebody in the chat saying that Duran are complete outsiders geopolitics and they know nothing, their guess is as good as ours. Come on now, Mercurius is connected. There's just no way that he's not connected. And he's left enough hints over the years. You know, he is part of a network. Now, I don't actually think that Mercurius's network is a right-wing one. I think he's connected to a kind of left-aligned or even liberal-aligned network, whatever that is. But you can't just pretend that he doesn't, like, he's a complete outsider. He's not a complete outsider. Come on now. All right. So let us continue then with some of these super chats. Augustine Phillips says, you mentioned your ideas and audience were of little consequence in the real world. With more respect than you think you are due yourself, AA, do we think that your 100,000 subscribers are just indolent basement dwellers? Don't you think we're intelligent, driven, and well-connected people? I personally know people who are directly influenced by you and your ideas, who are advising Max Krah here in Germany, hyperbolically dubbed the German Trump. I can see the trickle down from the ideas in our sphere everywhere. Why do you think the base tech bro started reading Burnham all of a sudden? Please give yourself more credit. Well, Augustine Phillips, I am but a humble scholar, sir. And, you know, I don't know anybody. So it is possible that people who are, you know, in various political spheres watch this channel and get influenced by the ideas and so on. But I am not, I don't always know about those things,
it's interesting your neutrality stance, because occasionally after appearing here and on various other little other podcasts and things like that, I've been approached by people for larger organizations, notably RT. RT approached me.
Did they?
And were like, do you want to give a talk on some Italian talk show talking about geopolitics and Ukraine and what you think will happen? And I was like, no, not interested in things.
Yeah, well, what I always say, Mark, no foreign money, you know, no Russian money, no Iranian money, exactly, especially, right. Not even any American money, I would say. And if you are part of these spheres and you're a Brit, I would just say that as a good kind of keep your nose clean in those sorts of ways. And that's why I always remain neutral as well. Don't join any parties, don't join any formal organizations, et cetera, et cetera. And I've always been like that, very independent. I like my independence, you know. Harrison Wade says, your value-free analysis is priceless. Well, thank you very much, Harrison. You see, and that's why. Ozon 904, he's given a $4.99 thanks on a video called The Problem with Unions. Do you know when I made that video? I think the published date on that video may be 2017.
Yeah, I was gonna say that feels very early, very early.
December the 10th, 2017. 60,400 views that video has accrued over the years. The union still, you see, the trouble is that it depends on what's going on. I think that the unions, if they're led out of control, can cause a lot of problems. But I have since I made that video, come to see the value in what they call intermediary institutions, Mark. That is something that sits between the people and the government, like a union or like a working man's club. Or in fact, I made this little video last Friday on arcades. Just I remember going down the arcades, and people were using this phrase I'd never hear before: third spaces. What the hell's a third space?
Oh, okay.
Basically, it's just like a place you can go see other people that is not connected to the regime in any way. Basically, like it's just a third space, you know. Even like something as trivial as a video games arcade, you know.
I'm a member of a local club for the same reason. It's just a small independent thing. The Royal British Legion meets there once a week, and they put on the occasional event. Like it's just nice, you know.
So I mean, but like a union actually gave some kind of pushback or protection against a government that gets verifus. And I tell you what, the book that really changed my mind on that was False Dawn by John Gray. And his analysis of how Thatcher basically centralized government power, far from being this kind of free market beacon. What she actually did was remove any of the safeguards between the government and the quote unquote people, which is kind of an interesting lens to view it as. Yeah.
In the same fashion, it's the council housing situation as well was interesting with the whole right to buy thing, which I feel like has been pretty disastrous for how people viewed property as an asset then rather than a house or a home. Like, I think it's a forerunner to a lot of the problems we have today with housing, frankly.
Mm-hmm. George Severance says, this is a $19.99 comment on the arcade, the timeless appeal of arcade. However, the comment is not about video games or arcades. He says, hi, AA. I bet on Donald Trump winning the popular vote in the US election, following your wise words. Betfair literally paid out today, so here is 1% of my profits to say thanks. I like that. He made a bet on my predictions, and now he's paying 1% back to wet the beak to Don Finucci here. I would like to use this opportunity to ask you a burning question of mine. Do you think it is plausible that a Western nation has staged a terror attack within its own borders to further a hidden agenda? For example, building support for digital ID, either with real casualties and patsies or with crisis actors and faking the event outrage. I appreciate this is a bit schizo, but you and Dan touched on this a while back, and I would be interested to hear your thoughts. Well, the thing is that in schizo land, everything ends up as a false flag or staged or whatever. But it is also true, as we've seen watching Adam Curtis and as we've seen with various other scenarios, that the government do occasionally engineer crises to bring in their own solutions. And they do occasionally run fed operations, right? I mean, we see it. Even today, Mark, have you seen there are 6 guys or 10 guys all dressed in black with the Nazi flags running around? I mean, it's like...
What?
Yeah, in America, Trump's America. And everybody was just like,
glows,
in broad daylight, in broad daylight, these 10 guys dressed in black and are flying the swastika. Yeah. We know that they do. We know that they do shit like that occasionally, right? So I would never rule out the government engineering a crisis, even though it's a libertarian book. The book Crisis and Leviathan by Robert Higgs is still pretty good on the process that they produce the solution to the crisis of their own making. This has been the government's modus operandi for a long time. And the intelligence services really, in my view, are basically it's like where they get to break all the little rules to just push the hand on the lever occasionally or to make something happen. I mean, I still think it's really interesting, Mark. And again, I don't go in for conspiracies, as people know. But I always thought it was really, really interesting that you had this moment in 2020 where Trump was the president. Boris Johnson just had a huge majority. There were elections coming up in France. Populism was kind of really coming in strong. The economy was doing well in America. And all of a sudden, there was a global pandemic. And all of a sudden, all of those narratives of populism winning were disrupted. And all of a sudden, all sorts of agendas got accelerated in the space of 3 or 4 years. Now, I am not saying that any of that was quote unquote engineered. What I am saying is, I find it really interesting that everything that was politically convenient for the powers that be happened in those couple of years against their. If you look at the friend enemy distinction, friend like regime friends won and regime enemies lost. In the long run, that's backfired on them, but in the short term, it achieved all those sorts of ends for them. Sorry, Mark, go on. Yeah.
As we know, neither of us are conspiratards or in that bent or whatever, but I'd really like to know more about the organization and the people behind the Hug an Asian Day that happened in America around that time to distance themselves from the racism of Donald Trump or whatever it was at the time. You know, just curious.
Run Up Your Thermostat says, I find it very difficult to hate Trump despite all he has done. I find it difficult to hate Boris despite all he has done. But I find it very easy to hate Farage. This is on the video from earlier today. The man just doesn't have swag. He's very wooden, very forced compared to the other two I just mentioned. Scream containment from the very beginning. And the same goes with our Peterson-pilled Tory containment leader here in Canada. What about that comment? He says he finds it hard to hate Boris, very difficult to hate Trump, but very easy to hate Farage. Can you see where he's coming from on that?
From my perspective, it's like there's two things at play here. One is that Farage is getting old. You know, he made it very, very clear that his passion was leaving the European Union. And a lot of his kind of greatest hits, as it were, come from that, you know, the damp rag speech and stuff like that, where he's got a kind of vim and vigor to him that is absent now. And his return to politics feels like, or it felt like at the time, him coming back a bit out of necessity in his mind, coming out of retirement. But I don't think his heart's in it. I don't know whether or not I'd call him wooden, but certainly not as clued in, not as finger on the pulse, certainly not finger on the pulse of the national sentiment and international sentiment around the issues which we care about.
Low T is how I describe him at the minute. Low T. AA's 1995 teachers open legs. What a name is that? Bloody hell.
What is this?
What a ridiculous. Did I ever tell that story? I can't remember telling that story. Well, let's just pretend I didn't. But anyway, that's a very curiously specific name. Perhaps an unpopular opinion, perhaps not. I consider the cucking of Boomer Farage for the better, since it shows the lie that Parliament could be a vehicle for obtaining power. Reducing respect for Parliament at least shows a counter-elite the opportunity to build up sans Boomer over the coming decades without the need to participate in the dance of democracy. I do think that Farage, being as disappointing as he is, could help with that possibly, although honestly right now, and I don't know if you feel this as well, Mark, we need somebody to step up in this country, because it really does feel like we're the only country who doesn't have somebody, doesn't it? It should be Nigel, really, but he's not. He is just not doing it. He is wilting at the moment. He needs to be blooming, if you want to put it that way.
A lot of it's capital driven as well. I know a lot of people, and we know a lot of people who have the kind of. I don't know if this is unique to us or if it's just something which happens. There's a lot of people who would step up, or you know, say that you know it's stated versus revealed preference or whatever. But like, you need so much capital, you need the confidence, you need some sort of popularity. It's why I quite like Clarkson for if he was ever to get involved, because I think, as you've said, he was always popular, but he's now kind of reached a stage where he's got a kind of extra. There's an extra kind of element to him now that everyone's seen him on Clarkson's farm, where he's been humanized even a lot more than the meme of Jeremy Clarkson, angry, talking car show goof, you know. But I don't know anyone who could capture the nation's interest at the moment, other than that, who would have a shot at it. And it does feel like we're missing someone. I do agree.
Trouble, Clarkson's not looking well, though, is he? Even in these couple of clips we saw today, like he had a little bit of the vim about him, but you can tell he's a man. You can tell he's just come out of hospital, basically, for this.
Well, he's like 78 or something, or I don't know.
No, he's only 64, but he's just not in good health at the minute. So he's just had a heart attack. So yeah,
it says something that I thought he was in his 70s, doesn't it? You know,
He's not looking good for 64. Coney says, Cunley Drupka put it best, we are cockwomble North Korea. One thing I will say about this Labour government is that they feel different from, you know, we were comparing to Macron and Trudeau and some of the kind of horrible liberal woke governments of yore. I don't know about you, Mark, but I feel like there's a different flavor and feel to this particular Labour government. This is like kind of icy cold, almost like Stalinist, old-fashioned socialism, right? It doesn't feel like it's driven by, like, I know Aaron McIntyre is struggling in his bet with me at the minute. And every once in a while, he tries to like point to Keir Starmer as an example of woke or whatever. But I feel like there's a different. It's much closer. What it feels like is a kind of you know, those horrible Eastern European communist regimes where it was like always snowing and you know, you could just see like the high rises and so on. Yeah. To me, Starmer feels like that, like a kind of 1970s East European socialist is what he feels like to me, but I could be wrong.
He feels to me like he's standing there in a position of his utmost eminence or whatever, as the cold, brutalist face of his regime, and everyone else is just in the way. It doesn't matter how many British people are screaming at him. It doesn't matter how much suffering he causes. Everything must now be a slave to his overarching goal, whatever that happens to be, is the flavor of the week. And you're right in that it's icy. It feels like you could slap him in the face and he would show absolutely no emotion and then send for you to be gallowsed or whatever. And that's different to like the crony kind of sneering Tory party that we've had over the last 15 years, where they at least have nodded to the concept of Britishness. You know, even as they're tearing down all of the institutions of Britain, they have sat there and they've gone, you know, don't worry, like all these immigrants we're bringing in, they're just as British as you, you know, like don't worry, get Brexit done, we're here for Britain or whatever. I hear none of that from Starmer. I hear nothing except, we're taking more money from you. We hate you. We are going to destroy everything and we don't care. Like, that's all I read from them, right? There's no even facade anymore, you know?
My spidey senses, you know, like Yoda can sense something. I've got a midwit radar, right? I've got a radar that senses low IQ interventions, Mark. And I sense a low IQ intervention in the chat. And I feel a ban coming on. Bye, Wes.
Oh.
All right, so let's carry on.
I was worried that you would accuse me of being a midwit then, but no, I see.
No. I sensed it. You don't know what you're talking about. Oh, he can't be a Stalinist because of the production of labor, because of the means of the ownership of the means of. Look, fuck off, theory cell. I'm not interested, mate.
The spirit of something.
Forgotten more about Marxism than you could possibly learn, mate. All right, let's carry on. Coney says, Myron Chuck's prediction of US bond market collapse. My nothing ever happens brain is skeptical, but I wouldn't rule it out completely. Well, Coney, funny enough, that prediction by Mirenchuk, that's Jason Mirenchuk. Last week, Mark, I had a video where I had a chat with this guy called Jason, wanted to point to this group called the Carlyle Group, who he thinks are the power behind the throne of Trump, right? But also, towards the end of the video, he predicted a global economic collapse, which would take place in 2025, which raised an eyebrow for me, but also led to many, many, many people in the chat being like, yeah, this guy sounds like a kook. This is just obviously stupid. And so I have asked the Black Horse to cast his forensic financial eye on that. And that video will come out on Thursday. It will be called Will There Be a Global Economic Crash in 2025? And if you know anything about the Iron Law of Headlines, you already know the answer to that. Coney says, what would your advice be to the wife of the Lego husband? Buy a giant set for him. He's probably wondering if her affection for him was real or if it was based on a false understanding. My advice for the wife would be, look, you have to give your husband his space. You have to allow him, even if you think his hobbies are childish or whatever, you have to allow him the space and the time to do those things. But also he should make some time for you as well. And that should be an understanding. It'd be like, okay, in these hours he's doing his Lego and in these hours he's hanging out with you. Right? I mean, that would be my advice to Lego wife. Koss Billington says, but really, the advice to the wife is irrelevant. My advice would really to be to the husband, because she is a function of him. If you understand the frame I'm talking about, her behavior will be a function of his behavior ultimately. That may sound misogynistic, but that is just the way of the world. Her kind of all of her like unhappiness or problems or whatever will ultimately be down to something that he is doing or something that he has set himself up for. And as we saw in the little bit that was shared, he obviously reacts very badly to criticism from his wife. Right.
To be fair, she did say, "Why did we ever get married?"
There's no to be fair, because you have to understand, if you understand the root of the maintaining frame, the woman can say everything. She could say anything, Mark. She could say, "Mark, I wish we'd never met. I hate you. You're terrible in bed. You've got a tiny penis," all of those sorts of things. She'll be trying to hurt you, right? Or she'll be trying to like get to your male ego or hurt your pride or something see if she can get a reaction out of you. You have to let all of that bullshit bounce off you and know that she doesn't mean it, or know that she's just trying to convey her anger in the moment. Okay? None of it means anything at all. And in fact, if you weather that storm, you could even be doing something else in an hour or 2 hours, or like she could say all of that shit, and within an hour, you're having a cutcher on the sofa watching your favorite TV show together. You know, it all of those things do happen all the time. So I just think that there is never a to be fair, she said this, she said that, because you have the core message that I want to give to all the young men is that the woman's words are contentless, right? The actual content of what she's saying almost never matters, ever. Anyway, let's carry on. Cos Billingham says, has Clarkson now shown the British what Farage isn't capable of? The great man of history turned out to be a grumpy old petrol head. Well, I don't think that Clarkson has shown us that. And I mean, I want to support Clarkson. I want to support the farmers. But I do think that there's a way of watching that interview we saw earlier that showed that he's not used to politics as well. He didn't come prepared for that, really, did he? And there's this, I mean, if I was there working with Clarkson, or if some of our friends were there, he could have responded to that in a much more great man sort of way, couldn't he? But let's cut him some slack. This is the first time he's ever done it. You know, he's not going to come out like Donald Trump straight away, is he? You know, so Chris Brimer says,
Much like other figures, you know, he's old, he's tired. But he may end up being like, he then basically throws his weight behind another character who is younger and more great manish, you know, like, and his example then provides the opportunity for other people who are potentially on the fence to then invest, if that makes sense. So I don't think it's a negative thing necessarily.
What is it with leftists in the chat today? And I mean, listen, you can do what you want. You can say what you want. We don't want you here. So stop coming in with your, just go away, all of you. All right. Chris Primer said, clearly the left are animated in the wrong way about this farmers' protest. So they've turned up to watch this, you know, with their usual title. Listen, we don't want dialogue. I don't want to care what you have to say. Don't care what you try to do. It will fail. Just bugger off. Nobody cares about you. Nobody likes you. And in the long run, you're going to lose. So run up your thermostat says, sorry, let's carry on. Chris Primer just says, Clarkson. Jacob Zindel says, this could be the best British political movement in the world. Okay. Aussie the beer thief. I mean, I don't know about that, because I do know that there is a finite end to this as well. So I'm not sure if the farmers, I mean, the only way it turns into something really big, and I think you'd agree, Mark, is if there is no negotiation from the government whatsoever. And if Starmer's just like, oh, I'm going to stare you down, and it becomes a real face-off, then it could turn into something. But you're counting on the government not backing down. And I will say, Starmer did back down on the pubs, if you remember. They quietly rode that back.
That was stepped down on, but only because an internal bureau submitted a report saying GDP will suffer. So it's, if he ignores the, because the internal structures at the moment are saying it's only going to affect 100 farms, it's going to generate revenue for the government, they're making a fuss about nothing. You require the internal department advising him to basically heel turn and go, you can't do this, they're going to blockade food production and we're actually going to have shortages across the country, blah, blah, blah. You know, like he needs an internal department to do that. What I think he will do instead is he will do his media appearances, press briefing or whatever, and he will just reiterate those same, because he's obviously can't articulate anything himself, it will be those same 90 IQ talking points where he makes it into a nothing, and he will ignore the protest and won't even address it at all. And then we'll see what happens, basically.
Ozzy the beer thief says, my family has been farming since at least 1620. 1620. We have a well-known billionaire attempting to buy us out. We've rejected all offers because we value our tradition. We are now forced to sell at a discount, likely to him. Isn't that That's the no. That is sad. Had that farm since 1620. John Lister says, "I just finished watching part one of your top 100 films. I wanted to say that you have great taste." Well, thank you, but you need to tell me something I don't already know, John. Extra points for including performance. Well, thanks a lot. John Lister says, "Do you like Rogue's other films? Walkabout, Man Who Fell to Earth, Bad Timing. I know you said you hate Don't Look Now, Donald Sutherland's Exposed Ass." I, as a Bowie fan, I like Man Who Fell to Earth. Yeah, I do like Man Who Fell to Earth. Swingfire 2000 says, "Non-farming businesses qualify for business property relief at 100%, so a corner shop would not actually suffer 1HT inheritance tax." Interesting. Redacted Brainwave says, "Hearing people like O'Brien talking activates the Stalin side of my brain." Yeah, I mean, O'Brien is just revolting. I mean, do you think he deliberately designed his content to rile people up, Mark, or do you think he's like believes what he's saying?
I think James, he believes O'Brien, what he's saying, and he's a human marshmallow with no brain cells. You know, his book that Harry Robinson's been reviewing or whatever, like, he's putting some of the things which we would consider dunks on him in there as accolades of his character. Like, there's some awful stuff in there. And he's like saying, "Oh, I won this exchange." And he clearly lost. And he's putting it in print. Yeah.
Pood says, "There is no logical financial incentive to farm at the moment. What happens when the tradition holding the entire industry dies out if they make it impossible for farmers to continue?" I don't know. Because I honestly don't believe that you can go to 100% imported food. And like I said, Venezuela is a textbook example right there. You can't go to 100% imports like that. I mean, there may be a few examples. I'd imagine Hong Kong is pretty import heavy on the food front, but Hong Kong is just one city, not a whole country. So Marcos 588 says, "NSO is right, and FP has alluded to much. Farmers are price takers and not price makers. They sell everything at wholesale and buy everything at retail." So there we are. Yeah, I mean, the margins we're hearing are really small anyway. So 30 grand a year is bad to run all of that infrastructure and have all of those costs and so on, and to only make 30 grand at the end of it is bad, you know. Tom says, "I'm new here and not politically literate. I'm a farmer, and this is all getting pretty depressing. Is there actually any hope for us going forward? Is our nation just going to move further into a multicultural far-left hellscape?" Well, Tom, if you want to get politically literate, I would recommend reading my book, The Populist Delusion, which goes through the ABCs of power and what politics actually is. The farmers, I'm not usually for mass protests, as I talked about earlier on, but the farmers are, or have the potential to be, an organized minority, and they can enact political change, as we saw, for example, in the Netherlands, when the farmers made that party, and within the space of 3 years are actually in the government now. Now, you could be super cynical and be like, well, Dutch power has co-opted or contained the farmers. But the fact of the matter is that the regime did not get things 100% on their terms. There was pushback. And in fact, they did not get to do all of the carbon-free stuff that they were all planning to do, which set off those protests in the first place. So there's definitely potential, I think, for farmers to be a genuine power block in the country, to put a check on this government, because somebody has to. Marcos says, "Horrid class traitor, ignorant soy face laden fatso." I assume he's talking about James O'Brien and not you, Mark. even though that sounds
correct.
Quite
he's talking about James O'Brien.
He's not talking about you, is he, AA? Well, as if I'd ever drink soy. Ticket to Ride says, we are literally paying for our own replacement. It's as simple as that. Yes. Marcos says, it's like TASS being handed notes directly from the KGB or Politburo, and it's in the liberal, free and democratic West doing it. Go figure. I mean, BBC were basically Pravda in that clip that we saw. Basically Pravda.
We have the most free and fair, fortified media class this country has ever seen.
Ardent Party says, CDN friend here, is NHS the only healthcare provider in the UK? No, there's no. We do have private healthcare too. But I think there's no way of actually avoiding the tentacles of the NHS, is there? Even if you go private, those hospitals are shared with the NHS or something like that. Is that right?
Well,
I don't know.
It's even weirder than that. The private institutions are under the umbrella of the NHS. So they have to take a certain percentage of NHS patients. But the scheduling is such that if someone pays to go private, they get priority. And if you're earning anywhere, I would say, above sort of like the 50, 60K threshold in a corporation, then you'll get private healthcare as standard and therefore get to jump the queue. So for them, the NHS works great. Works great. But for everyone else, you're waiting and suffering. I have a nerve condition from when I left the Air Force, and it took me 3 months to get a 5-minute appointment with a neurologist. So that was great. And they just medicated me and told me to go away. So it was not helpful. No time.
Well, you know, I've always had a sleep, never had a decent sleep schedule, Mark. I discovered that if I take melatonin, it helps me sleep, right? My late grandmother had to have melatonin, you know, in her final years. And when she finally left us, my mother just gave me all her old unused melatonins. And
right.
So I started to run out of these and rang the, you know, had an appointment with the GP and just said, listen, I've tried everything. Can I have some melatonin? Now, in this country, you can't just buy melatonin in Boots. Like in America, you can just rock up to Walmart or whatever, just buy melatonin over the counter. Here, you have to go through the NHS. And the doctor is not meant to prescribe melatonin to anybody under the age of 55, right? Well, I am not 55, yeah. Friends. In fact, I'm, believe it or not, I'm barely past 40. You know, I'm in my early 40s.
We met, you were 33, I think, when we met, I think.
35, maybe 35.
Maybe.
I feel like I can't exactly remember when it was, but anyway, well, as everybody knows, I'm a charming individual, and it was a female doctor, so I was like, oh well, you know. Anyway, by the end of the conversation I had, I had kind of persuaded her to give me the melatonin, even though I was underage, right? And she said, okay, I'll do this on the condition. Right, on the condition that you go to a sleep clinic. I was like, okay, then, all right, I'll do this. Now, to begin with, for the first step on my journey to seeing the sleep clinic, I have to have a phone call, right? So my appointment with the sleep clinic is a phone call. But anyway, okay. Month after I was prescribed melatonin, I had a letter through the door from the NHS. Oh, you know, Dr. Parvati, blah, blah, blah. Your appointment on the phone will take place on this day in August on this date, you know, 10:30 a.m. Okay, fair enough. 2 weeks later. Regarding your appointment, it's been cancelled. All right, okay. 2 weeks later. Oh, you've got a new appointment now. It's going to be October. It's going to be, you know, let's say October the 11th at 12 p.m., you know, make sure you buy your phone. Oh, okay. 2 weeks later, oh, sorry, sir, your appointment has been cancelled. Now I've had my third one through, yeah, which is going to take place in December. I fully expect it to be cancelled. What's interesting about this is that this is just the system, Mark, working by itself. This is an appointment I didn't want, and it's a right that I basically had to like take because I want some melatonin, all right, because of regulations or whatever. Now I'm set up to have this thing, and it keeps on just being like pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. And I'm thinking,
you have kept...
what if I actually had a serious condition here? You know, what is this?
Yeah. You have kept someone who makes and cancels appointments in work for 3 months due to you existing.
It's just like, this is the NHS talking to itself. It's like, okay, keep me in the loop, guys. Maybe one day I'll have a phone call, you know?
It's kind of, it's exactly the same as what I said. A private individual will have just paid or will have insurance and they'll just moved you on. That's what it is.
Redacted Brainwave says the current British government resembles the Spanish Republican government that preceded the Civil War of Franco. They are going too far. I mean, they don't seem to show any sensitivity for basic governance like legitimacy. You have to have a certain amount of buy-in and so on. And I actually worry that the influence of the Dark Lord is in the background here, Mark. But it's like Keir Starmer is so stupid that he takes, like, you know when Tony Blair says, like, you have to be able to prepare to do unpopular things and so on. Starmer takes all of that advice.
But I'll be unpopular,
But he doesn't take the side of the advice, like the other side of Blair, which is like, yeah, you have to, you know, appeal to the public and do all of the smooth word games.
You have to show dominance and you have to dunk on your political opponents and you have to be able to show that you're erudite and that you understand what you're doing and that you're relatively competent. And then when you take an unpopular decision and it works out for you, then you run with it. But like, he's just taking that and going, right, it's okay to be unpopular. I will be the most unpopular prime minister this country has ever seen. That works.
Well, it's bizarre because he's not like he had that big of a mandate or that much political capital to start with. But acting like he's got unlimited political capital when only 19% of the country wanted him in the first place. And even then it was through gritted teeth. And even then it was because most of us wanted to destroy the Tory party. So, you know, he's on thin ice.
Do you think they're aware that we want to destroy the Tory party and that's the only reason they got in? Like, do they genuinely think that they are the popular face of Britain?
Galactica Watkins says, I live in Melksham, Wiltshire. It is now just a housing estate, constant new housing, with a dwindling town centre of mainly foreign businesses. Sad. Peter Bocken says, building fake towns sounds like China. Nilbog says, two farms sold in my village, one for new builds, the other for solar panels. Gutting, absolutely gutting. Dollface says, what would you say you do here? Yeah, exactly. That's Clarkson going in. Clarkson going into the civil service department and asking, like, what's your email job about? We need to have the Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, or is it Doge, Department for Government Efficiency. Marcos says, get him on TLE office hours. We can red pill him. I do not think Clarkson will be coming on this show anytime soon. Sheep up cringe just says hello. Sam153 says, it's saddening to see this government doing self-harm to the UK. I'm hoping Starmer is relieved of power for your sakes. Well, thank you very much, Sam153. It means so much. Smoke Paprika says, instead of asking why the farmers aren't paying an inheritance tax, they really should be asking, why are any of us paying inheritance tax? Yeah, I mean, I've always been against inheritance tax because you pay tax your whole life and then they try to tax you again on it. It's disgusting, really. Aldor Banner says, look up Reeves's new office portrait. Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah, it's a communist hero, some female communist hero.
Expected, I suppose. Cringewalker says, the king has returned to Gondor and the Ring of Power is destroyed. But old Sharky is still scouring the Shire. This is Anglo-American diplomacy right now. My God, I mean, honestly, I mean, the people have been asking Trump to invade Britain. Would you support that at this point, Mark? You would support invasion. American
would I
invasion?
Support like the official vassalization, complete with an incumbent leader installed by Trump? No.
Okay, let's pretend. Let's pretend Trump invades and installs Vivek Ramaswamy as the new prime minister.
I still think we should be ruled by our own, bro.
What about Musk, Lord Protector? Elon Musk seconded from the Trump government as a kind of 10-year protectorate to sort things out, and then after that 10-year period ends, you know, you can elect British people.
At least in that instance, the British native population would actually become a client group. You know, like that would recognize itself as a client group, as opposed to what they are now, which is they don't know what they are. So,
Atlas Codes. The goal should be to make Prince George based. The only crown is the crown is the only way out. Coney says, in the spirit of Sean Connery, what if Lego White just needs a smack? Well, I do not endorse that. Contrary to some of the comments I saw earlier on, I am not a misogynist. I just believe in inherent sex differences and, you know, different ways of processing information in the brain, in the female and the male brain. Coney says, Scrump says that farmers are a client group jostling for subsidies adjustment, such as in the Netherlands, where only minor changes were gained in concession. How can UK farmers avoid this? Well, it may be difficult. And if the government was smart, they do that play that Scrump talked about. Scrump is right that there could be a very quick, and so is Alex. They're both right that there could be a quick end to this, a containment end to this arc. But it really depends. You know, Rachel Reeves, In the Netherlands, I'm not sure if they were dealing with Rachel Reeves, who puts commies up in her office, you know. And Niotsu says, I am 119 IQ, but I listen to you. Am I forever cursed with midwitism, or is there any hope for me? Well, I don't really know. I would not take your IQ score as being absolute, though. There are many other factors that go up into make up a person: open-mindedness, risk-taking, testosterone, all sorts of other factors that you could stick in there. Spiritual enlightenment, you know, you name it. There are so many other more important things than IQ. My view is, as everybody knows, that almost everybody is stupid and nobody ever learns. So there is that. Mark,
that's
any
the entire basis final thoughts? Of our friendship.
stupid. I think everybody's stupid, Mark, but you know.
Yeah, I know. That's great.
Where can people find you?
You can find me on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, under my name, Mark Houghton, at Not So Obvious. I'm doing some work at the moment for Vox Populi. That's at V Populi Media. I've appeared on the Lotus Eaters and I've written some stuff for them, so you can find me on there as well. That's pretty much it for me.
Now, with all these different appearances you have, like going on Lotus Eaters or working with Vox Populi, do you ever get any better? It's just old time's sake, Mike. I can't help but wind you up. It's just my.
You can't help but wind me up. Like we've been doing this now for 8 years, bro.
Oh dear. I'll just remind
like to
people.
Think that I mean, at least I'm no longer. I used to make videos on like the classical liberal approach to Tommy Robinson and stuff like that. It's No longer.
Well, at least
I'm not a liberal anymore, you know.
Okay, great. I'll just remind people, Dubai Courses Academic Agency, you actually can get 25% off all courses at the moment. Promo code MERIT, but most importantly of all, friends, get out.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.